morning, everybody.
Good morning.
The topic of this one-hour workshop is steps 4 and 5. My name is Pat G., and I am a compulsive overeater and food addict. And I'm seated with Beth S. And we are the co-leaders for this meeting. Each of us will have up to 20 minutes to speak, and then we'll open the room for shares on the topic for up to 3 minutes per person. This session is being recorded, so be mindful of that. My experience with doing steps 4 and 5 comes through having gone through a workshop or a step study, a formal big book step study. And the one thing I will tell you is, and the one reason I wanted to do this workshop was because doing these two steps is what it totally changed my life, my thinking, my relationship with my higher power. It deepened my resolve to stay abstinent, and which doesn't mean it's been perfect ever since, but because it's a number of years since I did this, but it means that I had one night where I overate, and I immediately called my sponsor the next day and got right back. You know, even as I realized what I was doing, I thought, you know, I'm not giving up all the good things that I've gotten. So I'm still going to be abstinent when I get up tomorrow, as I get up tomorrow morning and go about my day. So that's how profoundly affected I've been by working and the work that I did. And yes, I don't know that I was ever terrified of doing my my inventory, but I knew I needed to be fearless and thorough, and so I approached it by going back as far to the earliest memories I had. I just followed the directions that we see in the step 4 part of the big book. You know, I had a notebook, I had columns on the side that listed my resentments toward people or institutions or principles of life that we run into that didn't really sit well with me. You know, things people would say, like, children should be seen and not heard. I never liked that, I suppose, as a kid, but I didn't even like it as an adult. So I had those on one side. The middle column was how they affected or what the resentment was, a statement. And I was always told, has to be short, no more than 10 words. After that, it's too long. You're going to be able to say whatever it is in 10 words. And then the third column was, what did it affect in me? My self-esteem, my pride, my ambition, my financial security, and of course fear. when I went into this, I didn't have any fears. What am I afraid of? I don't know. But when I finished, I had about 50. Actually, I had more than 50. But my sponsor and I, as we went through them, figured out that a lot of them were too similar, and so it got down to be about 50 fears. Who knew? I had no idea. And then on the other side of my book, I had sections that, so what is my, and this is in the big book, what is my selfishness? What's my part now? My selfishness. What's my selfishness? And then what's my dishonesty? And then what are my self-seeking behaviors? And then what am I afraid of? those four sections were on the other side for this, for one resentment. And, you know, so for the first people I did, it was, you know, they probably, I don't know, we had one then. But they get to the people that are really the issues, really give you issues in your life, like children and parents and husbands and people like that. And there's a long list of resentments for some of them. And so then, you know, it just blossoms. And I ended up with way more resentments than I thought I was going to start at the beginning. Anyway, thank you. I went back to my earliest days, and my first resentment was towards my orthodontist, which I saw him when I was like six for that visit. Because it wasn't about braces and things. Well, it was. It would have, should have been, in my mind anyway. But it was, my father didn't, you know, there's a whole, I don't need to get into all those details. But anyway, I had this long-running resentment to this orthodontist. And then I just went from there. So I had other people in my school age years, then my adolescence, then college life, then adulthood. And you know, it took me a little while to get through all of them, and then institutions, then the principals, and when I was writing the selfishness, I mean, whoever thinks about what we're doing and our selfishness, and I mean, this was like new language, learning a new language, how to answer those questions. What's my selfishness? And it was great to have a sponsor who could read, you know, I would read my writing. We would go over it every week, and I would read it to her. And she would just make corrections in how I phrased something, or is that what I really meant, or did I mean something else? And she had some guiding phrases for me, like for selfishness, it was, now I'm having a brain freeze here. The selfishness was that I want what I wanted, and I didn't care about the other person's or the institution's desires, wants, and needs. That was my selfishness. And so that's sort of the beauty of this stuff, doing this. You write that over and over again, and it becomes part of your, it became part of my thinking. So now, as I go through my day, I can think about that with something that's really upsetting me, or so that I don't go down that road. I can immediately say, all right, higher power, I need help with this. You know, I'm going to give this to you because I don't want to go there. And then the same thing with the dishonesty. I mean, I never thought I was going through my life being dishonest, but these are dishonesties I tell myself, which I never thought about either. So it was, she said, well, sometimes it's easier to, if you try to tell yourself what the real truth is, then you can see what your dishonesty is. So I'm going to have a hard time thinking of an example off the top of my head. It's my honesty. Well, you know, if I was really upset with my husband or my father or something, I didn't think they loved me, that they didn't care about me. And the truth is that they did, but they were doing the best they could. So that was one of those kind of, you know, just again, turning the thinking into something more positive, in some ways more positive, putting it in a different light. They didn't really hate me. They just didn't know how to express love in a more positive way. Self-seeking behaviors. Well, those are your character, my character defects, your character defects, which of course I didn't really have any. Did you? Back then, not that I reflected on very often, And you know, I'm a retired nurse, and one of the first things I learned when I started my clinical training as a nurse, so a long time ago, was that I had to take my feelings about people and park them at the door. Because if I'm taking care, it doesn't matter who they are, what characteristics about them I don't typically like, but I had to park them at the door. So one of them was being judgmental about people. Well, so I went through my whole adult life thinking I was not judgmental. I learned how to do that. Well, little did I know. So judgmental is probably one of the most popular or frequent things in my notebook, right? And all those other character defects. I was just mental. I gossiped. I thought poorly about people. I wished them harm. Fortunately for me, there weren't any cases where I did somebody like bodily harm or even. I mean, yes, I shouldn't say that. I remember thanking my kids, but I also remember apologizing to them right after I did it back in those days. But anyway, so I want to kind of move along. The fears, I had no idea, but my fears were of things like abandonment, fears of that I wasn't good enough, that fears for losing money, things like that. So and then doing those pages were like doing the turnarounds. And then the next thing was doing a fear turnaround. So taking all those fears, making a list of those and turning those around. And that for me was and was the biggest eye opener in the writing, and then more importantly going into step five, into the reading of that. And yes, you know, I remember when I first started, it was like, but she's already heard these from me. We already did talk about them all the time, you know, as I wrote them. But I have to tell you, one of the most powerful things is to just be concentrating on that reading, at least it was for me, and hearing myself read for an hour and a half, all of those turnarounds that I did for the resentments, and hearing and reading all those self-seeking behaviors and fears over and over and over again, getting a sense of how I did lie to myself about these people or these entities, you know, like when you say institutions, you know, maybe it's your bank or maybe it's the IRS or maybe it's Congress, could be anything. And then the others, and it, but reading, when you have to just read that over and over and over again, it's very powerful, and it helps them. I think it helped me have it all stuck in my brain so that I could recognize it when, like I said earlier, when it comes up, and really make quick work, hopefully, with my higher powers help of putting it out of my head, so I didn't go down that road of resentment again. But doing my fifth step, reading that work over and over again, and the questions that I think I'm going to grab my
Here.
Book. Thank you.
The questions
that are big books.
Yeah. The questions that where is it? Well, the questions I had to answer was, or the most important ones, significant ones for me, were what would I have done if I had, well, first of all, there's one question you have to answer. Could you have done differently? I could have trusted and relied on God to show me the next right thing to do. Over and over again. Thank you. And that was for every one of those fear turnarounds. And if you had trusted and relied on God, what would be different? What would have been different? And if I had trusted and relied on God, like anything could, it could, there, the endless possibilities, depending on the particular situation, I could have turned and walked away and not said what I said. I could have just kept my mouth shut. Some of my resentments were over political things, situations, people. And so what could I have done? I could have worked harder for people I supported to be elected to public office, right? I could have, I know keeping my mouth shut was a big one, particularly with family members, you know, asking God, and I used to hear at meetings all the time, just ask God to sit on your tongue and jump off when you have something you need to say, or never miss an opportunity to say nothing. All those little tidbits that I have loved over the years. So hearing myself saying those things over and over and over, if I trusted and relied on God, I could have done these kinds of things. And the outcome would have been different, would have been better, because I wouldn't have, the fear wouldn't have grabbed me and to me down that road of resentment in the first place. So that's really what, and so that trust and rely on God phrase, just, it is now the mantra of my life. You know, when I do the 11th step meeting, whether it's, or the 10th step, right, the night before, the morning of, doesn't matter, or the morning after, the end of my gratitude list is that God is in control of my life. That's the last thing I write every day. And the end of my action plan is I'm going to trust and rely on God to show me the next right thing to do. No matter if I've got 3 things above it or 10 things above it, I know, because I've had lots of experience, that some days none of those things get done because my higher power has other plans for me. And so I just put that down there so that I'm aware and not surprised anymore. And I'm much less likely to get frustrated and angry. And I just call those days my adventure with God days, because that puts it in a much more positive light for me. And I think that's it for me. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Beth, and I'm a grateful recovering compulsive overeater. And so glad to be here. I found out this morning that I'm speaking on this topic, so here I am, happy to be doing service. And so I also have my big book with me. I have a big book on my phone as well. So I always have access to it. I have a tiny big book with the first 164 pages in the console of my car, and a little 12 and 12 too, in case I get stranded on the road and I have something good to read that will lift my spirits, whatever. So when I got into Overeaters Anonymous, there were no books yet. There were some pamphlets, and there was only one food plan. And so I grew up for the first year, few years in program reading the AA book and the AA 12 and 12. And I have worked the steps many times in this fellowship and in other fellowships that I belong to. And so I've done the steps 4 and 5. I've worked the steps using the big book, but also using the literature of other programs and other guides, etc. This is really my go-to and where I get the clearest instructions for how to recover from my disease of compulsive overeating. And for me, before I get to like how I'm going to work the steps, or steps 4 and 5 in particular, I have to cover the why. Because why on earth would we do this if we didn't have to? And it says that in the book. So one of the first things the book says to me is lack of power. That was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves, obviously. But where and how were we to find this power? Well, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself will solve your problem. So that's why I come here, is I need a relationship with a power greater than myself. And my story is that in the first 6 years I was in the program, I couldn't put to more than 9 months of abstinence at a time. I had many shorter pieces of abstinence. I could only do what I could do without tremendous fear. And I did not have a power bigger than God, bigger than food in my life. So it took me a while to develop a relationship with God that's bigger than food as a solution to my problems, because I really believe that food saved my life as a child growing up in a scary place. And so the why to do this really is important to me. My story is I got into OA. There was one food plan. I got a sponsor. I started eating that food plan. I lost 40 pounds in 9 weeks. And then but I hadn't done the steps or begun the spiritual part of recovery. And so I was stark raving skinny. And it took me a couple of years, but I gained my weight back. And so part of that was becoming willing. Oh, I can't actually do this myself. Oh, being thin is not being well. I need to do more to have a spiritual awakening, to have to allow a power greater than myself to solve my problem. And then, unfortunately, in that first 6 year period, so finally I became willing to work steps 4 and 5, because I didn't want to, you know, then I lost my weight again. And then before I was willing to work steps 8 and 9, I also gained my weight back. So I'm like the poster child for why should you do these steps? I don't want to be fat. If this is, and I don't want to be crazy. And that was the turning point for me. I finally got to like, I don't care if I'm fat. I just don't want to be crazy anymore. Please help me. And the steps are the way I found that help. And so I became willing to do things that I hadn't previously been willing to do. Because I lost my weight, I gained it back. I lost my weight, I gained it back before I was willing to do the hard stuff. So for what that's worth. And another part of the why is that in how it works, it says, if you've decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. At some of these, we balk. my story is an example of that. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg you to be fearless, thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Like, how many of us love letting go? Raise your hand. It's just the best thing, right? It's like I do it when my nails are just about ripped off because I've been holding on to something so tightly. Remember that we deal with food, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us, but there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find God now. Half measures availed us nothing. It doesn't say half measures availed us half. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked God's protection and care with complete abandon. So I became willing to do the fourth step. I didn't want to. It seemed like way too much work. I'm like, you know, I was sort of like I was in my teens. I was probably 19 or 20 when I my first fourth step. With the guidance of the sponsor who is now my sponsor, actually also. And if you forget what to do, it's in here. So in the chapter, How to Work, like the instructions are all right here. I could not ever have worked a first step without a sponsor. I don't recommend it. How I enter things gets twisted sometimes. So it tells me that I need to take a look at my resentments, my fears, and my sex life, and create a sex ideal. And it also tells me in here that if I don't do these simple things, I may eat again. And if I eat, I might die. And I am far from dying physically from being obese. And I was at the time also. I've never been obese. But I spent years walking through life dead on the inside. And I know what that's like. And I don't want that either anymore. And so looking at my resentments, resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics, compulsive overeaters, addicts than anything else. So really looking at who I resent, you know, you Pat described some of this, the instructions are all in here. Why, what it affects in me, these are the columns. Who I resent, why, what it affects in me, my self-esteem, my ambitions, my personal relations, my sex relations, my financial security, my security, etc. And what is my part? Looking at my selfishness. And how I understand this today is selfishness is not how I understand it today is what do I want? I want my husband to do this or that differently. That's what I want. So that I am comfortable. I want the employees in my company to see me this way so that I don't have to deal with conflict. And I'm never uncomfortable. I want to be perfect so that no one can judge me. You know, so I look at what is the thing I want. Not like, is it selfish, but more broadly, what is it that I want? And then why? So that what? Then looking at honesties, and as Pat was saying, like, I was so proud of being what I call cash register honest. If you gave me too much change at the checkout counter, I would give you the change back. I was honest like that. And I never told the truth emotionally. I never could say, because at the time I did not know, but I could not tell you how I felt, what I needed, what I wanted. I couldn't say those things. And so there was a level of pervasive dishonesty in my life. I didn't know, and I could not express it. I was too afraid to express it. Am I the only person in the room who's ever had that experience? Oh, you. I'm so glad to hear that. So for me, it also became, how am I lying? How am I being dishonest with myself? How am I being emotionally dishonest? I told very few outright lies. I'm a big liar by omission. I won't lie to you, but I will not tell you the truth either. I'm sneaky that way. So looking at the different ways that I'm dishonest, And a lot of what I do in the fourth step, but also in the 10th step now, is what are the lies I'm telling myself? I'm telling myself the lie, it's all up to me. And the truth is, I can trust and rely on a higher power. I'm telling myself the lie that I have to be perfect or no one will respect me. When the truth is, nobody's perfect. And people actually like it when I make mistakes and when I'm imperfect, because then it gives them room to be human too. I tell myself the lie that that I know what's best for you. When the truth is, I don't know what's best for me or you or anybody else. So that kind of inquiry. Self-seeking, I understand to mean, what are the things that I do to get what I want? And so my go-tos are, I will shut down, I will run, I will withdraw, I will be charming, I will be funny, what else do I do on a regular basis? I go into bulldozer mode. Like, if you're in my way, step aside, because this is the direction I'm going. And so those are the kinds of things I do to get what I want. I can be helpful. That's a really good way for me to get what I want. And so acknowledging those things, and what are my fears? And my fears are sometimes contradictory. I'm afraid that no one will like me. I'm afraid that I'll owe people things, you know, in order for them to get me to like them or them to like me. I'm afraid of being fully alive because it just feels too scary and dangerous. I'm afraid of dying from this disease or from like the ways I keep myself from being alive. So sometimes my fears are contradictory, but really just owning them all in the context of this. I also have found really a lot of comfort in and help in doing the part, the resentments against institutions and principles. So institutions being colleges, universities, banks, insurance companies, institution of, you know, the federal government, or the principles of racism, sexism, bigotry, those kinds of things, to really work through those on my in my four-step inventories. And my first inventory, my sponsor was, it was time for my fifth step, so my very first fifth step, and my sponsor was on her way to meet me. I was in college, at my college in the dorm, and we went to the chapel, I think, and I read my fifth step, and I was reviewing my fourth step, as it suggests that you do, and I... And I realized, oh, my mother's not in here. Oops. So I quickly did some of that. And so I was super duper afraid of doing the fifth step, because I was convinced that I was fundamentally defective. Like, there was something deeply wrong with me, and that's why I wasn't loved. That's why my parents were not loving, because if I was good enough, they would have loved me and been loving. Thank you. And so I had this deep-seated belief that I was fundamentally defective, and I was afraid that somebody, I was going to be honest and vulnerable, and someone would actually see what I had been spending my entire life trying to hide. By being as good as I could, by doing my very best, by overachieving, by being super helpful, by getting lost in other people want and need, I've been trying to keep from you that deep-seated belief. And so I was really afraid of judgment and being exposed. And what this book tells me is, if I don't do these simple things, I may eat again. And for us to eat is to die. I didn't want to die of this disease. I knew a whole bunch of people by then who had done steps 4 and 5 and not died from it. So I thought, okay, seems like it's safe for those people. So what I received from doing my fifth steps in my recovery, and especially the first few that I did, was free from shame. Becoming a member of the human race. I'm one among many. I'm a bozo on the bus. I'm not at the top of the pile. I'm not at the bottom of the pile. I am no longer, most days, an egomaniac with an inferiority complex. I am a human, and I'm imperfect, and that's part of the deal. And I didn't know. I thought being perfect was the deal, and I could never achieve that. So in doing the fifth step, I have felt deeply seen and heard. I have been met with only compassion and acceptance, where I thought that I would be rejected and judged. And that experience has changed my life. It has changed me at a cellular level. I am different because of the experience of doing the fourth step and being able to share it with my fourth steps with people who meet me with love and compassion and acceptance, and who reflect to me, oh, I hear this theme, or, you know, this shows up repeatedly, or here's something you might not have thought of. Really thoughtful, loving reflection. And now I have, and this is really more a result of steps, working steps 4 through 9, but also connected to work in 5 is the more I began to understand my character defects, which I call character traits, I call them coping mechanisms. They're how I survived. I'm glad I survived. They were really useful. They don't always work now. And so whatever you want to call them. So I can sort of reverse engineer it. Like, oh, I'm telling a lie. Maybe I'm afraid. Or, oh, I'm like moving really fast to try to be perfect. I'm probably afraid or resentful. Or there's something I want that I'm not being honest with myself or other people about. So I notice, I can identify my character defects or my behavior, if that makes sense. And then I can also understand my behavior as, oh, right, this is a reflection of my fear, my selfishness, my dishonesty, my resentment. And so I get to live free. How awesome is that? I do this stuff I don't want to do that doesn't make sense to me, that I'm convinced is not going to help me very much or change my life. And then I get to not compulsively overeat one day at a time. I get to not live in a fat body. I get to be an imperfect human, which is so much less stressful than trying to be perfect. Who knew? One day at a time, I have learned how to trust God, clean house, and help others. And that's what we come here for. That's what I came here for. I didn't have a way to live without binging my brains out. Now I do. And it's hard, but it's not as hard as eating food that's burnt so badly that I burn my mouth, or eating food that is literally frozen from the freezer, or pulling food out of the garbage or off the ground and eating it because I cannot do that. That was hard. This is hard. That's hard. I want the outcome I get from doing this, because that never solved any problems. So I am gratefully, humbly, humanly, imperfectly here one day at a time. And I'm so glad there are instructions for me in the book and through sponsors. And with that, I will pass. Now, what happens? Okay, this workshop will end at 2 minutes of. We have sharing, right? Yeah, okay. So we have 19 minutes or 7 minutes for sharing. We will hear three minute pitches from the floor, so you can come on up here. You can form a line if you want. The timer, Ms. Beth, will let you know when you have 1 minute left. If you would like to share, form a line over here. We remind you that this session is being recorded and your sharing demonstrates your consent to be recorded. If you wish to remain anonymous, please use a fictitious name or choose not to say your name or choose not to share. Please say where you're from, how long you've been in OA, but devote your share to your OA experience, strength, and hope on this topic of step 4 and 5. Who would like to share? Yes.
Thank you, both of you. Good morning, Claire, compulsive overeater, and from Quebec, Canada. Today, I was born today, 77 years ago. Wow. And I weighed 10 pounds. I was my mother's biggest baby, but she said I wasn't the hardest delivery, so that's good. That's good. Anyways, my most difficult, and I've been in OA now 31 years. No, sorry, I'll be 31 years on November the 5th. Doing the step 4, the hardest relationship in my life has been with my mother. I hated my mother with passion, to a point where I couldn't even touch her. That's how much, a very difficult relationship with my mother. And because of the step work, doing step 4, my mother passed away 26 years ago. And I went to her funeral, of course, and I was in a church because I'm practicing a Catholic. And I was in church with her funeral, and I was just crying and crying and crying. And I looked up and just said to God, my God, and he said, you know, thank you. I'm feeling my feelings. I'm feeling sadness over losing my mother, this woman that I hated so much. You know, and here I was able to love her, to forgive her, and to be at peace with her at her funeral. So that's one of the blessings of doing step 4 and 5 for sure. Thank you very much.
Hi, everybody. My name is Debbie. I'm a compulsive overeater. I've been in program about 12 and a half years. I've gone through all of the steps several times. One time I actually even did just like a basic, I did a fourth and fifth on just one issue or one person at one time, and that was very helpful. But what I wanted to share about today was the part about self-seeking, because it took me a really long time to figure out what that was. For many, many, many years, I'm like, what is self-seeking? And I would look it up in the dictionary, and I would look it up in, you know, I'd ask fellows, and I did finally figure it out. But I got a little bit of a different take on it today when I heard that self-seeking is my character defects, right? My judgmentalism, my playing the victim, my being helpful in order to get what I want, my martyrdom, the ways that I seek attention in order to get what I want. So that was really, really helpful. And I expect you going through the steps again soon. I'm looking for a sponsor. I did put my name up on the message board, so if anybody is an available sponsor, please reach out. And yeah, I'm just really grateful to be here. Thank you both for your shares. It was very awesome. I don't usually go to step presentations when I come to these conventions, but I know that I need it and that I'll get what I want and what I need. And so thanks.
I'm Liz, and I'm Liz E, and I live about 2 hours away. Oh, hi. And it's so cool for me to be here because I live in a very rural community, and I haven't been to an in-person OA meeting in like 15 years. So this is really wonderful. Thank you. And next month I'll have 2 years of abstinence, and I was able to buy myself a 2-year coin. I can't tell you how much that means to me, being in person and being able to buy a coin. Acceptance. Gosh, that was my last thing that I was at, and that's kind of going through my mind. But steps 4 and 5, there were things that were so hard. There were things I was so hard on myself about that I would just cringe if I thought about. So much guilt. And doing that searching and for fearless moral inventory and reading that, being met with kindness and love and acceptance, allowed me to forgive myself, allowed me to internalize the love and acceptance and forgiveness that I needed, that I couldn't give to myself on my own. And it was very life-changing for me. When I came back to program, it was 4 years ago, and all my meetings are on Zoom or phone meetings. And 4 years ago, I came back to program, and I did that. You know, I put the food down, and then I worked through the steps, and that was hard. But I remember reading that fifth step and just having this horrible panic attack. And I didn't, thanks, got 1 minute left. I didn't know what a panic attack was until that day. But boy, to be able to process that and let that go was so freeing, because what would happen is I would run to isolation, and then the comforter of food would knock at my door, and I would say, come in and sit with me. I don't want to be alone. But getting rid of those things that plagued me, able to see them differently, like, I made mistakes, I'm human. You know, that the food didn't call to me anymore like it did. And thank you so much.
Hi, I'm Beth. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Beth.
And thank you both so much for sharing. It was really helpful. And I'll just share a little bit about my process, which is that I sat down in front of Big Book with the Big Book method so many times. So many times. And I was just like, I don't have any resentments. I couldn't start. It was like, I don't know, writer's block or something. But when I did other things that asked me specific questions, I could answer those questions. And so I did that, you know, over and over, different, you know, OA has different workbook with those questions. I did it many different ways. And I answered the questions to the best of my ability. And I was grateful, and I was moving, and I was making progress. But, you know, and then the year that I retired, I had a focus. And it's interesting for me because it wasn't about that I didn't stop and take the time. I stopped and took the time to answer questions. There's a lot of like projects in my life that I can get the time, but I can't get the focus. And so that's what happened to me with the fourth step. Once I retired, I got really busy, but I had the time, and I took the time, but I had the focus. And I finally sat down after, you know, about 30 years of not being able to, I completely denied resentments. Although my therapist can show me how I, you know, swirl my head when I have a resentment, but I didn't know it. We have a double-headed shower, like a kind of big place. My poor partner had to be in there every morning when I bitched about, I've got 1 minute, when I bitched about work, about the people that I worked with, about, you know, people all the time and institutions and principles. And I couldn't see it until I could see it. And I'm really grateful that I just kept coming back to it. I also denied all fear. I mean, I've done, I could say, really fearful things, mostly really dangerous, just really stupid, just, you know, walking out into traffic kind of things and, you know, traveling kind of things. But I could not list any fears. And then this time after I retired, I have a whole list of resentments. Mine also includes principles like my mom telling me pride goeth before fall. I'm like, I get it, but that's got me totally jammed up, right? Anyways, I'm glad to be here and grateful to be able to practice this.
Hi, good morning, everybody. Annie, I am a compulsive overeater and an addict in all my affairs. I'm going to sit. My legs are a little weak this morning. I'll do a quick though.
Can you bring the mic?
I'll bring my. How's that? Better?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Thanks. Hey, wow. Thank you so much for both of your shares. Oh my God, so good. So I just finished another fourth and fifth step. I wanted to talk about the fact that my inability to get abstinent, and it's important because it relates to the fourth step. My inability to get abstinent had to do with that I was in other programs, and I had this moral dilemma. And the moral dilemma was, how could I be sober, solvent, if I'm acting out in a different disease? And and I was afraid to tell anybody that, you know, because then what would they say? Oh, well, you have to start your AA time over. You have to start your DA time over. And, you know, so I was afraid and I was fearful. And it really reflected in my inability to be honest in this program. And when I finally got the courage up to talk about it, then like everything changed for me. I also really needed to understand that this was a spiritual malady and that I did not have the power. I had no power. Thank you. Okay, so anyway, but I wanted to say that because I think sometimes for people who are in more than one program, that may be issues, but I guess my biggest defect that I have figured out is that I'm a people pleaser.
Who knew?
I didn't know. And I didn't know that that was what I was using to get what I wanted. And so this whole fourth step that I just did was all about my people pleasing. It needed its own fourth step. So, and I'm glad that I did it. I learned a lot. I learned that I don't have to do that, that I'm a human being and I'm allowed to have wants and needs, and I don't have to be manipulative in order to get them. So anyway, that's all I have. Thanks, and thanks for everybody's service.
Hello. I'm Ian. I'm a compulsive overeater. Also a member of more than one 12-step program. Thank you for your shares. I related to so much to that. I mean, I think the first time I ever did a first step, I thought, well, this isn't going to take long. And well, what will I do the rest of my day? And then it began, and it was like, what? It was like baffling, astonishing, wonderful, confusing. And I found the more I did it, the more I peeled back the layers of the onion, the more I dragged all that stuff out into the sunlight and looked at it, the burden of self began to lift. I came into this program not having any concept of how much fear I was carrying around. And it was astonishing. It was my life was being driven fear and self-centeredness. And so I started, you know, I've maybe got one or two character defects. Well, by the time I got down the list, it was a long, long list. But the more I did it, the more relief I found that there was. And however uncomfortable it might have been to reveal that and look at it honestly, it was a lot less uncomfortable than carrying all that stuff around. So I'm very grateful that I get to replace that stuff with surrender and gratitude. Yeah, I'm grateful to be here. Thank you.
Okay, it's time for us to close. Thank you all for your sharing. And a couple of things I heard about people pleasing, I totally relate. And this is the best thing I ever heard about people pleasing. If it were really people pleasing, someone would be pleased. And when it's hysterical, it's historical. And I got one of those going right now that I do need to do a fourth step on with an individual. Because it's hysterical. I'm like, oh, this is old. Thanks for your attendance at this workshop. We will close with the Serenity Prayer after a moment of silence for all of us in this room and across the world who are suffering and struggling with compulsive eating. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Thy will not mighty done. Enjoy the rest of your day. Thanks.
Thank you so much. Holy cow. That was awesome.
Behind you, girls.
Thank you, Beth.
So do you have to turn this off?
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering.
I think
that you
have to turn off the recording.
Why slide the button down?
Yeah, let's remind me.